This is Steve Sherlock on another Franklin Matters radio show, number 460 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, February 9, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a virtual format. All of the school committee members, central office personnel, along with the public, were remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distance requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the just over 2 hour and 20 minute meeting into three logical segments. The first segment covers the opening through the Annie Sullivan presentation, approximately 41 minutes. The second, covering the discussion action items, specifically referred to the Davis-Thayer closing discussion and vote, approximately 43 minutes. The third, from the discussion only items through to the end of the meeting, approximately 59 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder will hold all the other documents released for this meeting. And note, as we go to press, the superintendent's report nor the pool testing outline are yet posted to the school's website. We anticipate that to be soon, but it's not here as we go to press. Let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting of February 9, 2021.
Discussion only items, Dr. Hearn.
Yes, so tonight for discussion only, we have the reopening update, and we tried to keep the number of topics kind of narrow so that we could spend more time talking about pool testing and giving you an update on where we are in terms of moving forward with that. So in your packet, you have the reopening of schools status update, and last week Franklin went into the yellow as a result of a reduced percent positivity rate in the community, and we have listed out for you 4 weeks of cases in the Franklin Public Schools. We were not able to pull the number of staff in quarantine at the time of this report, but what I can share with you tonight is that it is consistent. So that week of 123, we had 45 staff in quarantine, which is about 6%, and we had 35 staff in quarantine the week after, which is about 4.5%. So that's kind of remaining steady over the past 4 weeks. We are concerned, and I just want to kind of hang a sign on it, and we're working with the high school administrators with respect to some of the trends we're seeing about attendance, particularly at the high school. I think that in many ways we have a really strong remote instructional program, and this is a tough time of year for a lot of folks, and we're seeing students not coming to school and participating instead remotely, even though it might be their scheduled time to be in the building for their cohort. Making a switch and having more students into the high school for those who want to be in is something that we would love to do, but it's not simple. One of the biggest difficulties has to do with how the cohorts are assigned to transportation and the bus routes. So I know that there's some frustration among families you know, we do have students that would love to be in the building more, but that is a bit of a crimp that makes it a bit difficult. But we aren't going to give up. We'll continue to review the schedule and continue to think about this and invite students in. And they are looking to bring more students in as feasible, but to shift the entire system does involve a pretty big lift with transportation. We have opened up an opportunity for transfers between hybrid and virtual learning academy for elementary students, rather than doing it at the end of the second trimester. So that went out late last week, I believe. I'm going to skip pool testing for the moment because we do have a brief presentation to share with you. The allocations for the ESSER II, the second round of coronavirus relief funding, came out, and our allocation approximates $475,000. And this can be applicable to COVID-related expenses through September of 2023. So our plan would be to spend down what we have remaining in ESSER 1, which expires in September of 21. Pool testing would be an allowable expense with coronavirus relief funding. And this 6 weeks window of the pool testing pilot ends around March 28th, which would leave us with 12 weeks left of the school year that we could fund. And we have more information about that in the presentation. We could fund that through the ESSER funding. There's a couple things that were completed since the last meeting. We have increased our bandwidth to 10 gigs, so that is in place. We also, in response to Tim Keenan's request and suggestion, had sent out a letter to Governor Baker to advocate for prioritization of educators in terms of phase two for vaccinations. I don't want to speak on behalf of Ann, but Ann put one together for the school committee through community relations, which went to Governor Baker to advocate from the perspective of the committee. And Donna Grady and I worked with superintendents and other union leaders through the Tri-County Roundtable in a joint advocacy letter to the governor. So that was action that was taken after our last meeting. I would like to share some information and invite Lucas and Paula to join about the where we are with pool testing, if that's okay.
Could I ask a question first?
Go ahead, Judy.
My question is, when do you anticipate full in-person learning for K through 1, 2 through 5, et cetera?
So I think that's a really good question. It is a question that is certainly being considered in lots of districts, not only here in Massachusetts, but is considered nationally. We are looking forward to some guidance that we anticipate will come out that will help make full and in-person more feasible. I expect the CDC to be coming out with some information. I expect the Department of Education to be updating their transportation guidance. And so one of the things that I think people are exploring is the possibility of returns this spring. The other certainty that I would say is that our planning for the fall involves full and in person, but there is a bit of an exploration around returning full and in person this spring. But that's going to, I think, require things like pool testing to be successful so that we can bring students back at distances, because right now we would have to do it at distances less than 6 feet. So it's a work in progress, similar to the conversation we had back with K and one. There's a process that a planning process that we're engaging in, and I couldn't put an exact timeline on it as I'd like, but with the unknowns that we have. But it's something that that we and other districts are looking to do.
So we're not any closer now than we were a couple of months ago.
I think we are closer. I think the pool testing in particular is going to be a tool that will be very critical in order to support more students being in the building, because we will have reassurance that the people who may be asymptomatic and may have the potential risk of spreading COVID are isolated. And I think that'll be reassuring, especially if we have to bring student and when we have to bring students back at a distance of less than 6 feet. I think that combined with the expansion of vaccinations through phase two will also aid in that process. So these two tools, I think, are really critical to having students back and in person. And I think we have made a lot of strides in pool testing area. I think we're trying in the vaccinations, but in the pool testing area, we've made some strides, and that is bringing us closer.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay, so I will share my screen and invite Paula and Lucas to join. So it has been a busy 2 weeks with our preparation towards pool testing. Lucas and Paula have been doing a tremendous amount, also with Lisa Trainer, in terms of coming to understand what pool testing offers. And we have been working with the principals and bringing the nurse leader and our school physician into the conversations. We still have logistics to work out, but we have more to share with you about where we are with pool testing. So the first slide is mine. So in terms of why pool testing, it is going to do what I had said, which is allow us to monitor students and staff for the presence of COVID in our school buildings. It provides an additional layer of health and safety prevention, not only in the schools, but also in the greater Franklin community. So this is a benefit to families too, in terms of knowing the risk or the exposure to themselves if there's potentially somebody in their family that is asymptomatic and has COVID. Vaccinations will add to the reassurance, and by doing pool testing, we'll have a better indication of the percent positivity and the incidence of COVID more specifically in our schools. We do keep track pretty carefully of the numbers, which will assist with making decisions on our instructional model. For example, if we saw a spike, we might have a more specific metric in terms of going remote. It would also allow us to be thinking about more in-person learning.
This slide is a summary of basically the last slide. I love this analogy of the Swiss cheese. Pool testing is just one piece of one of our health and safety practices and strategies that we can put into place. But it will be in combination with the other practices we already have in place, like mask wearing, physical distancing, a quarantine positive or a close contact. Each mitigation strategy alone has holes in it where the virus can kind of sneak through. But in combination, when you put all the slices of cheese together, it becomes a solid chunk of cheese and therefore prevents the spread of COVID, is the hope. And that last slice is those vaccinations that we hope to have hopefully soon between March and April for our teachers and staff.
And to not make any assumptions, what is pooled testing? We use the word that phrase often, but don't want to assume that we all are operating from the same definition. So pooled testing is the combining of respiratory samples from several people, and together they're put into a pool. And then the laboratory can test those pools in a more efficient manner, requiring fewer tests, increasing their capacity, and also the price involved with that. The test is performed once a week through an anterior nasal swab, which Paula will talk a little bit about. It's a different process than what you may have experienced if you've had a test that's a little deeper into the nasal cavity. But the results are delivered within 24 to 48 hours. And what we've heard through the webinars and some of the things that we've joined, some of the groups that we've talked to, within 24 hours if you get them there as soon as possible. And if there are positive tests that come out of the pool testing, the folks that were in that pool can then receive the individualized PCR test, the Abbott Bionics Now rapid point of care antigen test, and those results are on site within 15 minutes. This just represents the visual for you that kind of goes along with that definition of the weekly pool testing that occurs. When one set is flagged, we can then move into the next stage, which is to hone in on diagnosing where the which individual or individuals had a positive test.
This is a slide that I showed when we kind of initially launched the idea of pool testing, and it's been amended to include that we've been paired with Project Beacon as a vendor. So the Department of Education identified three vendors and matched to districts based on size and geographic region. And we've been paired with Project Beacon for the DESE pilot. Pools through this vendor are between 5 and 10 samples. So this example has 20, but that's not how their test runs. Prerequisites for pool testing, I also shared this with you, relatively low rate of virus among the population and a relatively high participation rate of individuals being tested. And just to indicate the initial interest that we had from families and faculty, we had about 50% of families responding to the survey saying yes, they would have their child tested, with an additional 20% saying maybe. And I think more information will be coming out that may influence others to have their child tested or not. They help them with the decision making, and a very strong response from our faculty and staff in terms of their interest in participating in pooled testing.
So how does classroom pool-based pool testing work? So what we will do is at the building level, we will divide a classroom into two pools up to 10 people. It could be three pools depending on the class size. Within these pools will be both students and teachers. It'll be a combination. And then that group of sample will then be tested. So they will either self-swab, or for our littles, a staff member will swab the students. They will go into the tube. We will send the results back. If they come out negative, great, the whole pool is negative. If they come positive, then we will do, as Lucas shared earlier, we'll do a further testing, what we call diagnostic testing, with the BinaxNOW Now test, to determine who the positive case is in the pool. So how do we take the sample in the classroom? As I said, from pre-K to grade one, we will have a staff member who will be trained to swab the students. And what it, as Lucas shared, it's an anterior swab, so it's a short swab, and it goes into the lower nasal cavity. It goes around four times in one nostril, four times in the other nostril, and then it goes into a tube that then is sent out. From grades two and up, we will do observed swabbing. So the students will swab them and staff will swab themselves. There will be an observer to make sure that it is done accurately. The observer will also be trained. And again, the observer will observe the student or staff member swabbing themselves four times in the right, four times in the left, and then the swab will go into the test tube. All the observers and those administering the test will have the proper PPE in place, and we have been told what PPE that those two staff members need to don during that process. This next slide is a video. We're not going to play it for you, but it will be available for you on the website and in the packet if you want to watch. This is out of Sharon when they are doing pool testing currently. And it just shows how the students are self-swabbing and then what they do with the swabs. And it's the whole process.
Oops, sorry.
So from a logistical level, the pool testing, the schedule, as we iterated on Mondays, first thing in the morning on Mondays, we develop a schedule to have the pool testing take place for our cohorts, a pre-K to 8 cohort A group, and our faculty and staff across all of our schools, and have our ECDC part of that pre-K part on Monday. And then later on in the week, when the second group, cohort B, enters the building, they would be tested on Thursday. And the idea is within 24 to 48 hours, you receive those tests. Planning for 24 hours, that would be when we would want to retest those individuals if they were positive. Positive samples that do come out. If you look at the bottom bullets, you'll see we mentioned this already about how samples would be collected for our young, or for our littles, as Paula said, or our older or more independent students.
The vendor has said if you test early in the day and get the kits out to the lab, it's a 24-hour turnaround time. So we would have it within the next school day, which is good.
And then the follow-up BinaxNOW testing, if that should be needed, we can do, we'll have those kits on site, so we'll be able to do it as soon as we find out which pool is positive, and then have those results back in 15 minutes, and then go into our contact tracing process that we have now.
And that's a great segue into this slide, which talks about what happens if there is a positive test. Just to be clear, this was the question I think we all had, and this has actually been updated and changed. Those that are found to be, if you're part of a pool where a positive test was found to occur, you do not need to immediately quarantine per the guidance. It's linked in this slideshow, but it's basically DPH guidance, which has come out. This is a surveillance test versus a diagnostic test. At that point, though, once we have that information, we would go into trying to individually test the individuals that were part of a pool that was flagged. This is because we have multiple safety measures. You saw the visual earlier that Mrs. Morano showed around the Swiss cheese model, if you will, to go through, including all of the health and safety standards that we put in place. And I would say that because the results are rapid for the follow-up in the individual tests, as soon as we gain that information and we learn that, we can then go in and test those individuals and then kick into our process.
And I think this is an important point that this has been updated, because I think it was a disincentive to some parents to feel that if they participated and their child was in a positive pool, that they would be automatically quarantined. And I think this is very helpful mm-hmm. in terms of using pool testing to keep school running and to keep kids in school. And I would just reinforce that all of those additional safety measures and safety factors are at play blocking the virus.
This is just an overview, a visual of the process we've explained. The left column talks through the collection piece and how that works. And then on the right side is the flow chart to learn. Obviously negative, the blue boxes you see. We would continue with business as usual. If there is a positive result, once again, it's a flow chart. And then when students are, or staff, if someone was identified as positive, we would kick into our current district processes when we learn that students or staff have tested positive.
If the pool does come out negative, however, which is a rarity from what we understand, then we would then ask that members in that pool go out for further diagnostic testing with a PCR test. So that'd be one step further.
Thank you.
One question that I think has come up and is really important to the success of all of this is the accuracy of the Abbott Binax Now antigen test. And I think the antigen tests, my understanding from talking with Greg Chiklis at MRN Diagnostics in Franklin, he's been helpful to us in terms of understanding things. The antigen tests have gotten more accurate over time, but they wanted to kind of prove that the Abbott Binax Now would be a good diagnostic tool as a rapid test. The PCR has been the gold standard, but they wanted to make sure that we could use the Binax Now. So they did a study to test individuals using both Binax Now and the PCR test. They did this in a drive-through setting in Lawrence. It included both symptomatic and asymptomatic individuals and included children and adults. And the results of the study are shown here as related to kind of comparing the Binax Now against the PCR test. On the left-hand side, this was comparing symptomatic and asymptomatic individuals tested with Binax Now versus the PCR test. And they had kind of very tight relationship between a positive PCR test and a positive Binax Now test in those that had a high viral load, and a high viral load would be most likely to be infectious. So somebody who's shedding a lot of virus and most likely to be contagious and pass that along to somebody else. At moderate viral loads, symptomatic individuals had percent positivity rates of 95%. Comparing the positive PCR to the Binax Now, and 88% among asymptomatic individuals. And then low viral load, caseload, these are individuals who are least likely to be contagious. There was a relationship of 88% for symptomatic and 69% for asymptomatic. So basically, the Department of Public Health felt comfortable based on this data saying that the antigen test was going to provide, particularly for those in the moderate and high viral caseload circumstances, some good data with respect to contagiousness for those who were testing positive. So the DESE classroom-based pool pilot has begun, and we are in the process of doing the onboarding with Project Beacon. It's a 6-week pilot at no cost to schools. and we can use, as I mentioned earlier, our funding from ESSER to continue, should we find that it to be successful. The estimated cost depends on our instructional model and participation. It's going to be less expensive in the hybrid model. In an in-person instructional model, particularly at the high school, we would see costs be a little bit more if we had more students in our high school building. But estimating out the costs in a hybrid model, we would estimate approximately, this is very high participation at 80%, but we would estimate 3,100 pool tests per week would be about $15,500 at $5 per test. And so for 12 weeks between the end of March and the end of the school year, it would be about $186,000. This is not take into consideration the individual cost of the Abbott Binax Now, which is between $25 and $30 per test, we believe. And those may need to be used in some cases, although what I have heard, and there are some districts who have been doing pilot testing for a bit, they're not doing a tremendous number of reflex tests. They do come up, but you know, most pools are negative.
Next slide just kind of outlines the responsibility for Project Beacon, which you've heard a little bit about what they provide, but one is the onboarding. We attended the webinar that was we were invited to along with our principals. They also handle the lab processing. The text system that you see there is the dashboard that they use. So the results get put into the dashboard through Project Beacon. We set up an account and we can monitor when those results come back, and as soon as they come in, we can then respond based on the data that's provided. Customer support as well, they've been great to work with. The Shaw Foundation is also involved as a partner to help us with the rollout. And on our end, the responsibilities for the district are overseeing the test logistics. We're currently finalizing the plan that we have to identify key staff and members of our school system that can help move this forward. And we're responsible to obviously physically take care of the collection and the sending of the tests to the company.
In regards to reporting, the pool tests, because they're a surveillance only test, they're not reported to the Department of Public Health. However, if we then have to do some reflex testing, diagnostic testing with the Binax Now, those individuals with positive pool samples will be reported to the Department of Public Health, just like our process now within the state is when you have a positive test, it's reported to Public Health. So, and it's whether it's negative or positive. So any type of diagnostic testing is reported to the Department of Public Health, just like now.
In terms of anticipated timeline, I'm sorry, Lucas.
No, go ahead.
Did I jump in?
No, you're good.
So this week we're providing information to you and we will share more information with families and our faculty and staff through this presentation and send out some videos as well as we'll be finalizing the implementation plan with our team. We anticipate that in mid to late February, it's a little unfortunate with February vacation coming up, but we'll begin the online registration of families and faculty and staff, which will allow them to complete the online consent forms. We'd like to pilot it in ourselves in some selected classrooms and schools for cohort B on February 25th after break and go through at least one, if not two initial collections, and then begin March 4th or March 8th, begin testing consenting participants in classroom-based pool testing. And we anticipate that people can opt in at later points in time. It doesn't have to be everybody all at once. This isn't necessarily a deadline for families and faculty and staff. People could choose to join later in March if they wish. And go ahead, Lucas.
And just finally, expected communications. Our website will be updated through the FPS website. We'll have a webpage dedicated to this. It'll include the steps that will need to occur for implementation. Instructional resources for those who wish to participate to make sure that they have the information they need to do that. All the key dates and information shared not only in this presentation, but as We continue to plan with our leadership team and connect with faculty and staff across the district. All the communications will be housed there as well. And finally, the FAQs, as things come up, if it's not included in our plan or if it needs more detail, we'll provide an FAQ to help be as transparent and helpful as possible.
That's it. Thank you for allowing us to walk through that with you. We're Excellent. Looking forward to having this tool. It's been, I think, a big advocacy effort and communication effort, and I do want to acknowledge and recognize Representative Roy, who worked with Denise and Ann and I and connected us to Congressman Auchincloss, who has been very helpful in identifying some project management support through the Shaw Foundation.
Good. Just follow up committee, any comments, questions, Jen?
I do have a couple of questions.
Sure, go ahead.
First is, and you might not know the answer, so if you want to get back to me on all these, that's fine. So I guess my first one, is there a minimum participation rate? So is there a percentage of the district that needs to participate to ensure validity of these results?
There is, but I'd have to get back to you after talking to Project Beacon.
Yeah, that's fine. I have a whole bunch, so don't worry if you can't get to them. So that was my first one. My second one is the cost associated with it. So, well, actually, let me start. So first, the BioNX. So I know that that has been in schools since the beginning of the school year as a tool to use for students and staff members who have been symptomatic. So we've used that as a screener for students and staff members who may have some symptoms of COVID. And it has been only used in that sense where then we're sending them out for a full test. So I understand that there's been this minimal study that's happened in Lawrence, but I wonder about that piece as a backup. And again, don't worry about answers. I'm just kind of throwing stuff out there. The next piece that I am concerned about is the administration of this. So how do we administer this to the kids? So, you know, I have this vision of like a medical cart walking through the halls like a snack cart that doesn't feel warm and fuzzy to me, right? So I do worry about that piece when we talk about kids' social emotional well-being and their concerns. We have students with anxiety. We have students who are compromised. We have students with, you know, learning disabilities, perception, all that kind of stuff. So I do really worry about that piece of it, kind of digging down a little bit deeper and looking at what that looks like when we start swabbing the nose every morning before they get their morning snack. You know, and again, it's concerning to me. I also would love to see some pros and cons about what this would look like. My preliminary research has kind of led me to not seeing the benefits outweigh the concerns that I have. So I would love to see maybe like a chart kind of summarizing that piece for us. I do understand where you're coming. When we talk about wanting to be back in person, this is one of those mitigation strategies that we use to help ensure safety. But I also do think we need to keep in mind that the 6 feet distance is a big factor in bringing kids back in the building. So even if this pilot goes well and we have the money to spend to ensure that there's people who are not carrying COVID and have symptoms and all that, 6 feet distance is a huge, huge barrier for us to bring back students full time. So I think that that's another point that we need to keep in mind. And then the final one is the cost analysis. I've run my own numbers. And I think that the estimate of 186 is being very conservative. So I would also like to see what that looks like when we look at the retesting numbers. Not just the baseline tests that we're going to administer, what those secondary numbers look like when we have a positive in the pool, what those extended costs will look like, what the extended PPE, because my understanding is people that are associated with the swabs and the collection have to be trained and have to be in full gear. So any cost associated with an increase in staffing, any cost increase with PPE equipment, and then the analysis piece. So I'm assuming that Beacon is not analyzing the results out of the grace of their hearts. So what is the cost associated with that analyzing of the samples? And I do think that 24 hours sounds great, but I don't think that that's gonna be a sustainable turnaround time with the volume that we're gonna be rolling out. I think we're looking at three vendors across the state. So I do worry about once schools are up and running in large capacity, will they really be able to hold to that 24-hour turnaround time? So I think that's it. All of them for now.
I wrote them all down. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Tim, any questions, comments, follow-up?
Yeah, a couple. The March 4th date for the pilot, is that all schools at all levels are going to start at that point?
Yeah, that that week in March is when we'd like to expand beyond kind of the selected classrooms and schools.
So that would include high school, middle, just all levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another question is with the gauge of 30% of the student population that families are going to not opt in to this. You know, somewhere between 30 and 50%. Is that going to, do we have a sense of what the teacher educator sentiment is on that? And if that is going to ease any safety concerns or not? You probably don't have the answer to that, but that's a question that I would have. I don't, you know, I strongly feel like nobody should have to be in an environment where they don't feel safe. Teachers shouldn't have to be in an environment where people are closer than 6 feet if they don't feel safe, if half the kids are not doing the pool testing. So I don't know if that's a question or a statement, but I would want to know what, you know, to the extent that teacher sentiment is impacted by whatever level we're able to achieve with the pool testing. And then the final comment that I would have is I saw the governor's response to schools' desire to have educators vaccinated earlier, and I thought it was a lame response, which was basically no response, like I'm not going to change anything. So I don't know if there's any opportunity, and maybe, you know, community members, if anyone's looking for something to do, for more people to put pressure on the state. If the state is looking to have kids get back full time faster, it feels like the fastest path to that would be vaccinations. So that's more of a comment.
Thanks, Tim. Judy?
No, my question would have been on the cost to this, but that was explained. And I'm just concerned that we're spending all of this COVID money on this pool testing. I know we have to spend it, et cetera, but I really hate spending all this money in one spot. That's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, Judy. MJ?
Yes, I have a question. I agree 100% with what Jen mentioned about the, you know, the 24-hour return on the results, how that, you know, really doesn't seem to be sustainable. My question is about how these samples are going to be packaged up, labeled appropriately, and delivered to the lab, wherever it is. Who's going to be taking the samples to the lab?
So I responded, there's a couple of different options around getting the samples to the lab, and I responded that we would seek to use a third party like FedEx to bring the samples to the lab versus a courier.
Okay, now who's going to be packaging the samples and completing the requisitions that have to accompany each of the samples? Or are there requisitions that have to accompany each one?
So that is part of the logistical planning that we're putting together with respect to some of these details related to roles, responsibilities, and people. I think that you know, our offices in our schools are, you know, kind of used to making arrangements for pickups and mailing, and this would fold into their processes.
But when you take a sample, it's got to be packaged appropriately. And then never mind.
I don't know enough from Project Beacon about that packaging.
So that's, I could,
that's something that you would need to know.
So I can just chime in on some of the roles and responsibilities working with them. They've listed out where there are district leads and then there are school leads, which means there has to be a site-based person in there to coordinate the collection and the sending of these tests. Part of our planning with our leadership team tomorrow as part of this phase, getting this information, knowing who we were paired with on Thursday, and now working together to develop. We have a plan that we're not ready to share yet because it does involve multiple people within the district that we need to have conversations with and make sure we have a full understanding. But we have been working with Project Beacon and the Shaw Foundation to identify who in these roles would be best suited to move this work forward. Just to answer that question for you, MJ.
Okay, and how many tests are going to be completed in a day? I mean, in one morning, how many tests are going to be done? I think you said it.
It would be based on opt-in. I think there were initial numbers from Dr. Hearn when she originally had surveyed, but it would be based on the number of people who choose to who would choose to participate moving forward.
What's your best guesstimate?
I think we'll start with maybe a 60%, a 60% opt-in. And I mean, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of how many kids we have in each building for cohort A. And I would need 30 seconds to jot a few notes down.
Okay. And you can go on, Sarah.
I thought you were waiting for that answer. Okay, Denise, thank you. Thanks, MJ. Denise.
So I have a question, I guess, about vaccinations. Have we started to create a plan for when it is time for the teachers to get their vaccinations? How this is going to roll out? I guess I'm just worried that we're not going to have something in place when the time comes.
So my understanding right now is that it's not going to be in our hands in terms of vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And we will be responding to kind of a state plan where mm-hmm. there are regional sites where people make appointments and get vaccinations.
Okay. Thank you.
It's not what we would prefer. And I know that mm-hmm. the school committee's letter had suggested that the school district play a bigger role, because then we would be able to be planful and be thinking about people who may have adverse side effects and impacting the school day and things like that. But I don't think that that's part of the rollout as I understand it.
All set, Denise?
Yeah.
Elise?
I don't have anything else. I just want to say thanks to everybody else for asking great questions.
Yeah, good questions. I think just following up on what Tim said, to the extent maybe putting some political pressure, because when we as a group kind of put a letter together for the governor, we consulted with all the local people in town, Board of Health, Jamie, Tom Mercer from the town council, Jeff Roy, and we have the absolute capacity locally to get these vaccinations streamlined, done. They did it so efficiently with the first responders. All we need are the vaccines here. A lot of communities are ready to do it. We could do tons of them in a day. Not tons, I exaggerate, as I often do. But so to the extent, sort of like as Tim was saying, any kind of political pressure out there to sort of say, you know, this is crucial to opening our schools. And if we don't think teachers are essential workers, then, you know, we're wrong. But I would just follow up on what Tim said about that, and that we know that testing, I mean, when you look at college campuses and how effective the testing has been to keep kids on those campuses, I know Dean's testing their kids twice a week. It's a huge part of the mission of keeping kids and staff safe, things like that. So that's all. Any other comments from school committee. Anything else? Sarah, are you done with the reopening?
Yes, and just to get back to MJ. I priced it out based on 3,100, which is an 80% participation rate. If I think about what might be more realistic as a startup point, I think we might be looking at more like 1,700 tests per week, which would be a lower participation rate, and then building up from there.
Okay. All right, that's a lot of samples.
I'll set MJ on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sarah, anything else?
That's it.
Okay. I always want to make sure we always leave time for public comment. If there's any follow-up.
Sorry, I have one more thing, and I don't know.
Yes, go ahead, Jen.
Sorry. So, Sarah, I know this is kind of backtracking, and I didn't know where to interject, and I didn't want to interrupt. But, you know, back to kind of the Davis Thayer piece, you know, to not leave it hanging. I know that there's been some emails from the community around concerns around communication. So maybe just to make a recommendation to establish maybe some kind of an advisory council to help with that transition piece, with some stakeholders representing our different parents, community, and schools would be helpful. And again, I apologize. I know this is kind of out of place here. No, I just fine. Didn't know where to throw that in.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If I can jump in and sort of echo that. Sure. I think that's a really important point to make. And so I appreciate, Jen, you bringing that up. There have been some emails that have come from families and come from staff, and you know, we haven't wanted to you know, get too far ahead of any decision as part of stage three of the process, but certainly we can't help you know, kind of administratively be thinking about stage four and what steps and actions would need to be taken. You know, we have an initial survey that gives us an initial inkling of what some parents feel and some staff feel would be important as part of the transition process. But certainly there is, you know, kind of conversations happening among the team in advance of tonight's meeting to discuss and be thinking about and wanting to communicate and convey, you know, a steering committee and advisory group that will come together from both DT and Keller communities to work together, work on actionable transition steps, you know, some of which might be, you know, similar to things that we do anyway as part of transitions, like student placement, for example, but also identifying and putting forward thoughts and ideas and wishes and wants and needs so that we can be responsive to those as well. And thinking about the transition in multiple steps, you know, kind of before the school year, early in the school year, and then as the school year continues and goes on. Jen, thanks for bringing that up, because it is, I think, a really important part. Particularly as we look at stage four and developing those action steps, wanting to make sure that that families, including students, as well as faculty and staff are involved as well.
Any more committee members? Any comments? Okay. And if maybe people, I don't want to miss any public comments or not call on people, so if you can help me with it. I see Selena. And I'm just going to ask again if please public comment. We certainly want to hear. We're not going to respond, but we want to hear what you have to say. But we're just in the interest of making sure that everyone has a chance to speak, to please. I do use a timer just to not be rude, but just to make sure that everyone has a chance to speak who wishes to. So with that being said, Selena, did you want to make a comment?
Hi, yeah, quick question on the earlier part of the reopening update. I was wondering if there was any updated information on installing UVGI in the elementary schools that were not initially included in that first stage of the plan. I know that we had heard in your last report about the UVGI GI at the end of the year, that there were parts back ordered. And I'm wondering if there are still parts back ordered. I know we were worried about funding. We weren't sure if it was going to carry over. Now we know there is funding carrying over. So I was just hoping and wondering if there's any movement on installing UVGI in the elementary schools that have not yet been slated to get it. Specifically at Kennedy, I've not been enjoying getting, you know, four letters a week about active cases. And I would love to see that at Kennedy as well as the other schools not included. Thank you.
Thanks, Selena. Okay, so make sure we get that information written down. How about Joe? I'm not sure who Joe is, but would you just say your name and then give your address if you wouldn't mind? That's part of the process. I forgot to say that with Selena, but we need that for the record, for the minutes. So Joe, do you wish to speak?
Hi, Anne. It's Joanna Lucier at 17 Clearview Drive.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm just putting my nickname in there.
Sure.
I guess I kind of logged in a little late, so around 7:10, and I was disappointed that you guys didn't listen to citizen comments for Davis Bayer. I thought Tim and Denise brought up some really great points that were easily dismissed by the full school committee. Kind of started like with the school start times. You guys listened to citizen comments that lasted for hours, and I feel like this was a pretty big decision. And I just wished we got a chance to be heard. Maybe we should have sent emails and stuff, but I think there was just a lot of things that happened really quickly and the vote was made. And I was just like, oh, okay, that just happened. And like, I understand the decision, but I think the timing is a little tough with what the admins have to deal with right now. So that's all I had to say.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Lisa Ladd?
Yes, hi, thanks. Lisa Ladd, I'm the speech therapist at Davis Bayer. I just wanted to say really quickly two things that I agree. I wish that Mr. Keenan's and Ms. Spencer's concerns about the timing of closing Davis Bayer were addressed a little bit more thoroughly. I think if you guys are going to close us, I feel like it would have been a lot better for the staff as well as the kids to have done it in a year. And it really isn't about, I can only speak for myself, but it has nothing to do with me. I just feel like in the middle of a pandemic, when kids are not in school full time, it doesn't give us a lot of time to get these kids ready for a transition. And as a staff member there, I can tell you that I don't know of a transition plan in place at all yet. So that's a lot to do between February and June. With kids barely in the building and trying to get them ready to go to a new school, help them feel like they're prepared. And really that's our focus, is on the kids and making sure that they're ready for this and that the change is gonna work for them. I wish that the school committee had heard a transition plan before making their decision on which year to close us. I feel like we kind of did it and now we're going to be doing it quickly and we don't know a plan at all.
Thanks, Lisa. Is there anyone else? Julie?
Hi, Julie Ricci.
Go ahead. Yeah.
HX Way, DT mom to 2 fourth graders. So I've sent you guys lots of emails. All the committee probably knows my name right now, and I'm really sorry for that, but I felt like we had to be heard. And I'm speaking publicly tonight because I feel like I haven't been heard. I've sent emails after emails. I've asked question after question, mainly around what are you going to do to transition the kids in a positive way? The school's going to close, right? Whatever. It is what it is. We're all over that. But what are you actually going to do? How are you going to do it in a pandemic? You talked about closing 6 schools over the years. There was no pandemic then. World looks fundamentally different. I have one child who is very high needs, is in school 4 days a week. He is freaking out. He was walking around, if you looked earlier, he was walking around watching. What's happening now? Another child who could care less, she'll be fine, very different profile. But what I wanna make sure you guys understand, this has felt like a sham from the get-go. We were promised monthly updates, we haven't received them. There were 2 community nights in September in the DT library, in someone's cafeteria, I don't know what school it was, but it wasn't ours. That's it. There was one over Zoom, we weren't heard, we weren't talked to. It's been a dictatorship from the word go. It doesn't feel like a two-way communication. So if you want our help, to help our children and our amazing staff, many of which are looking at me now on the screen, please let us help you. Involve us in the conversation. Stop talking at us and let us talk. These are our kids. These are our staff, and we care about them. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. Anyone else? Am I missing anyone? Just make sure I see me. Okay, I don't see any. Okay, thank you. All right, moving to information matters. Budget subcommittee, I think we have a date to meet March 3rd at 4:30, budget subcommittee. I think everyone said that date would work okay, so we can post that one. Community relations, Denise.
Yep, so our legislative forum is scheduled for Tuesday, March 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Anne Marie created a flyer and sent it out. I know that she posted it on social media. So just mark some time off on your calendar, and I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Thanks, Denise. Policy, MJ?
Next meeting is on the 25th of February 25th,
great. Joint PCCs, Judy.
The meeting will be at our next school committee meeting.
Okay. Substance Abuse Task Force, that's meeting at the end of February, right, Lucas?
February 23rd, Dr. Bergen.
Yeah, February 23rd. How about School Wellness Advisory? I don't know who wants to speak to that. Lucas, Elise?
I can do it.
Okay.
We met this morning. Our new and improved SWAC website is up and running. Check that out. Thanks to Amory Tracy. Just a quick update. The nutrition group has put together some nutrition resources for health and PE teachers to use. They've also worked with Franklin Honey to get a new beehive for Parmenter, which will start in the spring. Physical activity group reminds everyone that the YMCA synchronous and asynchronous exercise classes are available to all staff. There's a link with more info on the SWAC website. And we're looking to get more input from staff and then add more synchronous classes before and after the school day. And the mental health group discussed embedding some mindfulness opportunities through morning reflective moments and also through apps for educators. They're also looking for ways to incorporate more mental health education into the health curriculum. Our next meeting is March 16th.
Thanks, Elise. I think I covered all the committees. Did I leave anyone out? No. Okay. New business, Dr. Hearn.
Next meeting, we will have a reopening status update, and we have a school highlight. We had originally planned on having the budget presented, but after talking with the budget subcommittee, that will be presented on March 9th.
Okay. That it, Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. Consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from the January 26, 2021 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend acceptance of the donation of a USS Constitution model ship from Mark Jandreski, valued at approximately $200 for FHS as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $440 from BJ's Wholesale Club for in-house enrichment as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check for $10,000 from the Digital Federal Credit Union for a scholarship as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, questions? Okay. Seeing none, vote will come on the motion to approve the consent agenda. Jen?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Tim?
Yes.
All righty. Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ian, yes. Motion carries. All right. Payment of bills. I did review the warrant. They are in order. Payroll, Judy?
In order.
Okay. And at this point, entertaining a motion to adjourn, just thank people for helping me kind of work through the amendments, and I'm not good at that. That's something that was entirely new to me, and I appreciate the support and help in kind of working that through, because it was something that was new, and I appreciate your patience in helping me through that. So thank you for that. So at this point, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
And is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all those, roll call vote. Jen?
Yes.
And Tim?
Yes.
And Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Anne, yes, unanimous, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
This is Steve Sherlock on another Franklin Matters radio show, number 458 in the series. Number 459 in the series. Number 460 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, February 9, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a virtual format. All of the school committee members, central office personnel, along with the public, were remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distance requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the just over 2 hour and 20 minute meeting into three logical segments. The first segment covers the opening through the Annie Sullivan presentation, approximately 41 minutes. The second, covering the discussion action items, specifically referred to the Davis Thayer closing discussion and vote, approximately 43 minutes. The third, from the discussion only items through to the end of the meeting, approximately 59 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder will hold all the other documents released for this meeting. And note, as we go to press, the superintendent's report nor the pool testing outline are yet posted to the school's website. We anticipate that to be soon, but it's not here as we go to press. Let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting of February 9, 2021.